Hello and welcome to the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm Tim Nash, a beekeeper always wanting to learn more and also the man behind the Paddock Bees account on Instagram. This is a podcast for those who've fallen into the beekeeping trap and want to learn a little bit more from the beekeeping community. Each week, we'll mix up the guests and provide some insights into the world of beekeeping. So sit tight and we'll soon make a start. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Andrew, the man behind Swan Gardens Honey Instagram account. Those who follow Andrew will have seen his beekeeping journey through his posts, and we'll be delving into his experiences of managing hives in his Peterborough-based apiary. I can't wait to find out more about Andrew's experiences, so let's get started. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining today.
You're very welcome. Looking forward to talking to you.
So, as per usual, let's go back to the beginning. When did you start beekeeping and what got you initially interested in keeping bees?
I've always had an obsession, I'm sure my parents would say, with animals. And my degrees are in at Nottingham. I did zoo biology and then I went down to Plymouth and did conservation biology. So I've always had a fascination with animals. But my degrees, I focused really on penguins and giraffes, so nothing to do with insects. And I really avoided plants and bees, which is the things now that beekeepers are pretty much obsessed with, weather, plants, and then obviously their bees. But then when I was, it's probably a couple of years ago now, I went down to Quince Honey Farm in Devon. And that place had, at the time, I think they've moved premises now, but at the time they had a colony that you could, it was about the size of a small room, a small shop, and along the side of it, it was a glass wall. You could press a button and it opened up a whole colony of bees. And you could see, probably took about 5 minutes to open up, but you could see the colony, you could see the bees working, and it was an established colony, so you'd be able to see exactly what's going on. And there were people there to explain everything that was happening. And the year after that, the Christmas after that, my wife bought me a beekeeper for a day kind of experience. And pretty much that's where it started. After I got that beekeeper for a day experience, it took maybe a month or so for us to decide that we were actually going to get a colony of bees and see where it went from there.
So was that back in 2019, was that?
Yeah, it was probably about a year before that I visited Quince Honey Farm, so probably 2017-18, yeah. And then it was in 2019, yeah, that I first got those bees. There's a local business near me where I did the beekeeper for a day experience called Bees for Business, and that's where I did everything, and also where I got the bees from.
I always think it's useful just to try and push some of those and understand where people can get bees and reputable sources and just make sure that they're using what's near them, because it is fairly easy just to go online and get your bees from here, there, everywhere. But yeah, I always think it's good to know if you've got questions, then actually if someone's not too far away, then it's good to do that. So obviously back in 2019, that's when it all started for you with your own colony. What's your current colony count?
So I had a few problems in the first, the first year went quite smoothly. And then the first overwintering period, we're getting the bees ready for winter and then trying to get them back out the next year in March. So in the March of 2020, I noticed that the queen had disappeared during winter. So she probably died or absconded, I'm not sure. So when I got into March last year, just before lockdown, really, I had a colony of bees with no queen and no eggs, because they don't lay over winter either. So no way of them getting back to a full strength colony or growing at all. So at that point, I had to contact my local association, so the Cambridge Association and Peterborough Association, and a very kind lady there managed to supply me with a nuke of bees, and also I bought a full colony from her. The nuke of bees, I had to unite them with the established kind of the queenless colony that I already have. And I used something called the peppermint method. I don't know if you've come across it yourself. Right. Dissolve a peppermint in some hot water and then use like a garden sprayer. I've got the small handheld hose lock sprayer and use that to spray down each side of the frames for the nuke and the frames for the colony and put them into an unused box and hope that they get along. Hopefully that peppermint is there to like mask any scents, mask any pheromones on there. And it worked. Both those colonies are there. So, and also last year I split one of the other colonies. So I've now got three colonies.
Okay. It's interesting, that peppermint one, because you often see for uniting colonies, the newspaper method, which is effectively put one colony above or below, one below a sheet of newspaper, let them chew through it. And by the time it takes them to chew through it, those scents and smells have merged and they're less likely to go after one another. But the peppermint one, that's it's a new one. We'll see if any listeners try this that one out this season. And in terms of your hives, obviously there's so many different types of dimensions and poly and wood. What's your preference? What do you tend to go with?
So my hives are all wood cedar, and they're all 1412 ones, mainly because that's what I learnt on. So 1412 ones are slightly deeper in the brood box than the normal standard nationals, which gives you a bit more room for eggs, a bit more room for brood, so you get a slightly larger colony. It's a bit like doing brood and a half, where you've got a normal brood box and a super has the brood area. And then my nukes are all poly, mainly because of the overwintering properties of polystyrene.
Your hives, where have you currently got your hives set up?
I'm fairly fortunate where I am. So when I moved into this house, I wanted to look after some form of animal. So when we first moved in, we got chickens. And then when I decided to venture into beekeeping, behind my garden, I've got a bit of space of land. So I was able to put them in there. And I've got, all three there. I've probably got space for a couple of nukes as well. But I've also got now, I've contacted two farmers nearby, and they're both willing for me to have, they've not put a number on it, so hopefully they don't mind, but a certain number of hives there too.
That's great. Yeah, it's good to be able to find that local support to be able to expand and put your hives somewhere else. And it's also enjoyable just having them in the garden. I've got mine in the garden, and it's nice at lunchtime, just go out, pop down, see what's happening, and take it in and get you away from the desk, which I've been enjoying.
Yeah, especially in summer. I'm always popping out there and having a quick look at the bees. And whenever people come round, it's the first thing I want to show them, really.
They're always a bit wary, though, because they always think, oh, this is going to go straight to stinging me. It's like, well, that is a risk.
It's something they can do.
Thinking about, obviously, your beekeeping experiences, what do you enjoy most about beekeeping?
Probably because of my background and my degrees in conservation and in biology, I think it's the learning side of things that I love. The person who taught me a lot of the things that I know about beekeeping, a guy called Jez Rose, he's a lot into science and that side of things, and I've probably adopted it from him as well. This last summer, Cambridge Association, which is the Peterborough one kind of partner with, they managed to get a talk by Tom Seeley, which was really nice to listen to because he's one of the biggest researchers in the world on bees. And some of the things that he talks about, just and his passion as well, is just infectious.
For any of those who haven't listened to any of the Tom Seeley videos, there's a number of those online. You'll see a number of books. The one I found quite interesting was the whole bee lining side of things, and actually just going and finding wild colonies and bee lining and finding out how long it takes for a worker bee to take some feed, go to the colony, come back to the feeding station, take the direction of travel that they're going in, and just honing in on all of that to find the colony. I thought that was fascinating.
It was that one that he did a presentation for, and he also did one about communication, where they bump into each other and beep into each other to let them know that they need to increase foraging or increase storage within the hive. Fascinating.
Flipping that question on its head, what do you dislike most about beekeeping?
Ooh, am I allowed to dislike anything? My wife would probably say the cost. It's not a cheap hobby to get into. I think one of the sayings in beekeeping is if you want to make £2,000, you need to start with £7,000. You end up spending quite a bit, especially when you're first getting set up, because you need at least two of everything. A lot of people say to start with two hives, and that's probably something that I'd say I wish I had done in the first place, because my first one got close to collapsing before somebody helped me out. But you still need extra nukes for any splits during summer or swarm captures, anything like that. Lots and lots of supers, probably twice as many as you expect. All the extraction equipment that you need as well. And yeah, it soon adds up, especially in the first 2 or 3 years.
So Andrew, if we go back to your scenario, which you had in March last year, where you realised that you had a queenless colony. If you had a second colony at that point, which was queen, right? So by that, we mean that there was a queen still present and laying in that colony. What would you have done at that point?
Something that I actually had to do at the end of 2020. So I made a split at the end of 2020, and the donor colony, I guess, became queenless. And they, for some reason, I think it was my fault for knocking down too many of the queen cells, but they got to a position where they had no queens. But what you'd be able to do in that situation is take a frame of eggs from one of your current queen right colonies, preferably a stronger one, and pop that into the other, into the queenless colony, and they're able to raise from one of those eggs. They'd select a few and they'd raise a queen from that. One of the mistakes that a few people make is to not check on that after a few days, because with emergency queen cells, they tend to raise quite a few, and you end up with 10 or more queens emerging from that colony and cast swarms. So what you're supposed to do is knock those back to one or two to prevent that kind of thing.
It's useful to outline to some people who think, yeah, I want to get into beekeeping, and actually they've heard the advice about having two hives, and it's just quite a great example actually to demonstrate if you had the two hives from that day dot, then actually you would have been able to navigate that situation fairly differently, and obviously you wouldn't have had to have got in that nucleus colony, that nuke, later in the season, and your colony could have built up earlier from obviously them rearing a queen, but obviously you'd be somewhat limited because you wouldn't have had all of the drones around to mate with that queen as well, so you still might have had some issues in March last year.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And now that I've got three colonies, yeah, I definitely see the benefits of having those compared to previously.
Now, we've all got a few funny stories up our sleeve. What's your best beekeeping story or experience?
Oh, it was probably around the same kind of time as I had the problems with my queen in the original colony, but I've never been stung while beekeeping. I've been stung a few times now over the past 2 or 3 years, but it's always been while I've just been plodding around the garden, and it's been my fault. So I've been pulling up flowers and I've grabbed hold of a bee or I've stood on one a couple of times. But one time last year, I just got microscopes, actually. I just bought two microscopes for pollen identification and dissection. I went outside and I popped my Crocs on, as I do to poddle around the garden, and a bee got trapped between my foot and the inside of the shoe. Immediately, I took off the shoe, and I had a sock on, so I took the sock off as well. The bee had flown away and left the stinger in the sock, so I didn't get too much of a dose of venom, but what I did was quickly rush inside and pop it under the microscope, and I managed to capture a short video of the venom sac continually trying to pump venom in, even though it was no longer connected to the bee, and that was picked up by a few Instagram pages, a few local news pages as well, and shared quite a bit on the internet. That was quite cool.
Clock that one. Before jumping on this evening, I had a look through your page, and I found that, and I thought, yeah, it was really fascinating to see how long it just kept on going on for. And kept
it was like
on
a good 5 minutes or so that it took, because it took me a while to line up the camera and stuff to record that. So yeah, it was a good 5 minutes. I was quite glad that wasn't stuck in my foot for that whole time.
So all in, thinking back at 2020, how was the season for you?
I managed to get quite a bit of honey. So I ended up with 150 probably jars of honey. I also managed to get somebody to design me a nice logo and things, so I got all my branding sorted out for last year. So yeah, it was a pretty useful year. I was supposed to be collecting 3 colonies of bees from a beekeeper who was getting too old to do it, but because of COVID and everything, that kind of fell to deaf ears in the end, and they decided to hold on to them for another season. So that's hopefully, and that's why I've got one of these farmers lined up for setting up an out apiary over there. But yeah, it was a pretty successful year.
And then thinking forward for 2021, what are your thoughts for this season as the bees start to get a bit more active and we're manically trying to think about what we need to be doing? What are your thoughts and ideals?
One thing, you might have even seen it if you've popped on Instagram. One thing we did the other day, me and my wife, was we set up jars. So we've gone through with, I think it's about 40 jars. So we've filled a super with jars on top of a crown board, which sits on top of either on top of your supers or on top of your brood box where they store honey. And we've drilled loads of holes in it, one underneath each jar. And inside each jar, I have used some molten wax to glue a small strip of starter wax. And I'm hoping that I'll be able to get them this year to store or build comb inside the jars itself, and then fill that comb with honey. And then at the end of the season, or maybe in summer if I can, if they do it that quickly, I'll be able to fill up each of these jars with honey that I've spun out from different colonies or even from that colony, and then I'll be able to sell jars of honey with comb that's been built in them,
which looked really good actually. I did see that, and it's different from chunk honey that you might go out and you might buy, because chunk honey is going to be honeycomb which is cut up and put into the jar, whereas what Andrew's trying to do is something somewhat different, which is actually have the bees build the comb in the jar, fill that with honey, cap that honey, but then obviously add in the extra honey to fill up the jar as well. So it will look really different to just a usual chunk honey, because you'll be able to see the wax actually that's been built onto the inside of the jar. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final outcome of that and seeing how the bees
Me
do on
too.
that.
Typically, they'll not like the jars and they'll just ignore it completely. But hopefully, they'll be able to use it. It brings people a little bit closer to it as well, because you'll be able to see, hopefully, I'll be able to take some photos of the bees filling each jar up with honey. So it'll be a jar that has been at some point full of honeybees.
Definitely. You can take the roof off the hive without getting a face full of
Yeah,
bees
fingers
if they're
crossed.
angry ones. They're stuck in the jar. Obviously, you seem to have had quite an interesting ride, obviously, with having that colony, which was queenless coming out of the first winter. What would your advice be for any new beekeepers out there who are thinking about getting into this hobby?
I've been on a few courses now as well, and a few of the people who've been on these courses, I'm pretty certain won't be getting bees at the end of it. Whereas if they hadn't been on that kind of course, I think they would have. Some people would just dive in. A lot of people, when they first get their hands, they're in a bee suit, they're over the top of a hive, they take the super off, they take the lid off, and they get a face full of pretty angry, stingy bees. It can be quite daunting for quite a few people. So one thing I would say is, if you can, get yourself on a course. I know they're probably not being run at the moment, but I'm sure by summer this year there'll be courses back on and you'll be able to get that kind of thing done. Because if you invest, like I said, quite a bit of money into getting yourself a colony, getting yourself all the kit that you need, and then you're a bit scared of them, and there's no going back by that point, I guess. The other thing is, yeah, like we already said, is getting two colonies. If I'd do it again, I'd definitely start with at least two so that you can sort out any queen issues that you've got, and it gives you a bit more. If you want to practice or try something out, you can try it on one of the colonies without affecting the other one, and vice versa.
You can watch as many YouTube videos as you want, listen to as many of Paddock Bee's podcast episodes that you want, but nothing's going to be actually opening up a hive, pulling up a frame, dealing with that sound of the buzzing round your head, thinking that it's inside your veil, whereas actually, no, just calm down. You're absolutely fine. You need to take a measure of all of that. And I think a lot of people just assume that they'd be absolutely fine with that rather than actually being a bit too unnerved by it all and not really having the, I don't know, the patience to get to where you need to be handling the bees, because you definitely need to be able to settle yourself down a fair bit. Otherwise, it's always going to get worse for you, and the bees are going to know when you're nervous and you're not doing what you need to be
Exactly.
doing.
Yeah,
So I
I've
think,
seen a
yeah,
few people
probably the
who
best.
turned around as soon as you take the lid off and they're like, nope, this isn't for me.
So we've spoken a bit about your plans for trying to get some of the honey into the jars. Where and when will people be able to get their hands on some of your honey later in the season?
This year I did try and do postage, so a few people contacted me through Instagram. It's Swan Gardens Honey on Instagram. And I did manage to get some posted out, but the postage per jar is fairly expensive. So mainly it's just in the Peterborough area. But if you contact me through, yeah, Swan Gardens Honey, I'm able to sell it through there.
Something I found as well, that when you're just selling one jar of honey and you've got to put a small parcel postage on, which is what on a second class last season it was £3.10, when you know that you can get two jars of honey in a small parcel, you might as well buy the two to get the most out of that postage. But yeah, the cost of postage relative to how much you're spending on the honey, the jar becomes quite expensive at that point. I definitely found that out on a
Yeah, I
few
had a few
instances.
interesting conversations in the post office when I popped in, and they ask you what's in the box. I have to explain that it's honey, and then they're a bit confused at asking me why I'm posting honey. But yeah, I got a few people in the post office to buy some honey actually as well.
One of the themes that we like to close on and we like to ask the beekeepers is, what are your jobs going to be for this week?
I have currently got my hand in stitches after stabbing myself in the hand with a chisel. So until these 5 stitches are out, I've not got much planned for this week. But what I want to do after these stitches are out is I do want to make up another super of these jars with wax in the bottom of them, because I think from looking around and things, I've found quite a few people who have been successful with it, and if I can do it, it'd be an interesting little project, so I want to try a couple of those. So it'll take me a couple of days to get that sorted out, but other than that, I'm just waiting for the bees to wake up, really. A quick couple of checks just to make sure that they're getting through their fondant quite nicely and they've not run out and they're not going to starve before spring. But other than that, not much to do now until spring.
And are you making all the equipment that you need? If someone saw on your Instagram page, actually, I really like the idea about the using the jars, is that something that you're knocking up together, or is that something that you've been able to buy from someone else, or a modification of other equipment.
No, I do woodworking as well. So most of the stuff that I've done, like some of the nukes that I've built, things that I've just built from scratch, the honey jars with the wax in the bottom of them, was just something that we came up with and thought, oh yeah, let's try that this year. So yeah, no, it's just all stuff that I've done myself.
Good. So it's still a focus on thinking about when the bees get going, what do we need to have prepared and ready to go? And as and when the colony expands, we need to give them the extra space in. Are you going to be putting that jar super on the brood first, or are you going to be putting a normal super on first? What's your plan there?
I'm in the east of England, and you've probably come across all the neonicotinoid stuff with the use of that with sugar beet. And sugar beet is this area. It's the east of England, unfortunately. So I want to try and avoid them storing all that kind of stuff. So I think I'll just stick anything that involves creating wax straight on top of the colony. So yeah, I think this box like that is just going to go straight on top to try and force them to create wax.
No, good. It's just good to understand as whether at what point in the season you were thinking of putting that on, whether you were thinking for the spring flow or whether you were saving that for a summer.
Normally I would have done it for in the spring with the oilseed rape honey, because that was another thing around here a few years ago when oilseed rape was a big crop. We'd try and get people to store the oilseed rape and like kind of convert that into wax rather than storing it as honey, just because it crystallizes so badly. And I think I'm going to try and do the same kind of thing with this one and just get them to use spring to build out this comb. And then if they haven't filled it with honey, use the summer to fill it with honey.
Definitely be keeping an eye and seeing what the final product looks like. So with that, hopefully, obviously, people have had some good direction as to what they should be doing for this week, thinking about if you're starting to get into beekeeping, just some of the advice there. So Andrew, really appreciate you taking the time today to join us on this episode of the Paddock Bees
Podcast. Thank you very much.
Hi everyone, thanks for taking the time to join me today for the Paddock Bees Podcast. I really hope you found it useful. I'd love for you to come back and give me some feedback, so head over to Instagram and send me a direct message, or email me on paddockbees@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you want to hear about. So please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts. Once again, thanks for joining. See you next time. Bye.